getting a view into the locker room that you don't normally see.
A sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
The honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning, TSN1290.ca. Good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Chuck Gormley. Chuck covers the Washington Capitals for CSNWashington.com. And Chuck, you mentioned certainly a busy offseason so far, and it continues. July 23rd is when Braden Holtby's arbitration hearing is slated for. That's 5 days from now. Are you expecting that a deal gets done between now and then, or do you think that they're going to end up in the contentious arbitration process?
Brian McMillan said he's prepared to get arbitration with both Holtby and Johansson. I would tend to guess that they're more inclined to get this done with Holtby before arbitration than with Johansson. I think that they're kind of waiting to see the market value of Marcus Johansson. But with Holtby, it's tricky because he made $2 million last year. He finished fourth in Vezina Trophy voting, and he's probably looking north of $6 million per year. The caps are probably around 5.5, I'm just guessing there. But he's got some comparables. I mean, if you look at Pekka Rinne, even though he's 32 years old, $7 million a year. You've got Sergei Bobrovsky, who's certain age range at 26, and he's making $7.425 million. So you've got a range there that I'm sure the Holtby camp is looking at the 6.5 range, and that's where Carey Price is right now. So I'm guessing if that goes to arbitration, he's probably going to get a pretty sizable award. And the Caps have about $11 million in cap space. So they don't have a lot of wiggle room when you're talking about Holtby getting 6.5 or so. And then Marcus Johansson, I was looking up some numbers, Mikhail Bodker just got $3.75 million. And he just had 14 goals, 14 assists last season. So I think Marcus Johansson, if you look at the numbers, will probably get more than that. He'll probably get in the $4 million range. If you do the breakdown, Johansson has 12 more points than Bodker in 62 fewer games in his career. So I have a feeling that Johansson is going to probably go the distance. I think we're going to see that get arbitration.
Chuck, you had a really nice piece on Madison Bowie yesterday on CSNWashington.com. I'll put a link up on Twitter there. I remember Richie and I were at the draft in New Jersey. He was taken in the second round. He was super elated, and you know, he played so well this year for the Kelowna Rockets. Mm-hmm. And in the article, you touch on that they think they might have another John Carlson on their hands now. Can you explain a little bit about the article and maybe if you think that there's actually a chance that Madison Bowie might even make the NHL this year?
Well, you know, I think because of the Capitals' depth on the blue line, he's going to start in Hershey, but it would not surprise me if he is in the lineup by midseason, because right now they have a couple young guys, Nate Schmidt and Dmitry Orlov, as their bottom pair. So I think that there's room there if one of those two guys struggles. And in the case of Dmitry Orlov, didn't play at all last season because of a wrist injury. So I think that Madison Bowie has really developed, and you guys have seen that. Physically, he's developed. I think he's put on about 15 pounds, and he's up to 210 right now. And he said that's a perfect weight for him, maybe even 215. But you can see that just in seeing the day that he was drafted and now, you can see the bulk in the shoulders. And one thing that he said that he needs to work on is being a little more physical, closing in on guys. And offensively, love him. I mean, they love that potential. They love the first pass. They love the speed. They love the fact that he can jump up in the play. And they love the fact that he has played in some big games. I mean, there's a guy who won a gold medal with Canada in the World Juniors, goes to the Memorial Cup final and loses in overtime. That's pretty heady stuff for a kid who's 20 years old. And I think the sky's the limit for him. And I do see some similarities. I see the big shot that Carlson has. And John Carlson spent parts of two seasons in the AHL and was actually a defense partner of Carl Osner, and they came up together. They were defense partners together with the Capitals, and I think that that's what they want. One thing that their assistant general manager, Ross Mahoney, said is we like to overcook some of our young players which is really the Detroit Red Wings plan. I mean, they'd rather overbait those guys in the AHL and see them ready to come up.
Chuck, final question for you. And, you know, we talk about, you mentioned Joel Ward having departed, and of course Troy Brower having traded and replaced by the two wingers, right wingers and Oshie. Why am I forgetting the other?
Williams.
And Justin Williams, excuse me. Mike Green is a guy we actually haven't mentioned in this interview, and you spoke about Schmidt and Orlov being on the back end, the 5-6. How big of a loss will Green be offensively? We know he was, you know, kind of playing behind Niskanen and Carlson. You just mentioned Carlson playing behind them in terms of kind of a defensive role, but offensively still very gifted, move the puck really well. How much are they going to miss him?
I think Alex Ovechkin is going to miss him the most. I mean, when you look at Alex Ovechkin on the power play, he plants himself in that left circle. And Mike Green could get the puck into Alex's wheelhouse like no one else. He knew the right pace. He knew the right position. And Alex would be winding up almost before Mike Green even had the puck. So that's one thing that the Capitals will definitely miss. John Carlson can do it, just not as well. And I think, Matt Niskanen can do it, but just not as well. So that is where they'll miss him the most. He's an offensively gifted player. And I know that Mike Green takes a lot of heat for not playing good defense, but this past season was, to me, his best defensive season. I thought he was very reliable on the back end, good positionally, got his stick in lanes. And I saw a much better all-around Mike Green than I had earlier in his career. And I think that's something that the Red Wings are going to get. I think they're going to get somebody that can play both ways a lot better than he did early in his career. And by the way, guys, I heard you talking about Winnipeg maybe needing a depth forward there. Eric Fehr, you guys know him very well.
Yeah.
he's still out there. And I still think that he had one of his best seasons as a third-line, checking-line guy. Very reliable.
What, did he have 17 goals this year, Chuck?
19,
there you go.
Is he for sure not coming back to Washington, or you think there's still a chance he makes it back to the Capitals?
I think he maybe is realizing now that maybe he was asking a little too much and thought that there was a market value for him that was higher than it is. The Caps are going to be really tight. If they pay Johansson and Holtby what I think they will, they're going to be right up against it. So unless he can take about $1 million, I don't think he's going to come back to Washington.
Well, there'll be another thing to watch for throughout the rest of the offseason, especially as the arbitration cases get settled. Chuck Gormley is the Washington Capitals insider for CSNWashington.com. Chuck, thanks for joining us this morning. Appreciate you sticking through us through the power outage and whatever other natural disasters befall us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks very much, Chuck. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Pulls up on the air, pulled down by Silverberg. Here's Silverberg, saves it, they score! A backdoor goal by Ryan Kessler. 2 minutes and 14 seconds to go, and the Ducks have tied the game.
Ryan Kessler scoring on your Winnipeg Jets earlier this season during the first round of the NHL playoffs. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Yeah, Drew, I got to say, it's nice to experience a blackout and actually have it happen on air.
Yes. Well, that was my joke. You tweeted about the blackout, and I responded with, "There was no way that's your first blackout."
Well, you know, I think it's funny because it was very temporary. It was a power surge. I'm not an electrical engineer by any means, but whatever happened there was very temporary. But what was the most amazing was when we went back to Chuck, he was midpoint.
Yeah, yeah. Chuck, nothing phases Chuck is what it. That just tells you that nothing phases Chuck. That's how that works. Anyways, we're going to talk about the Ryan Kessler contract extension that he got in Anaheim earlier this week. It's a 6-year deal worth $41.25 million total for the value of the contract, an average annual value of $6.875 million for Ryan Kessler. your immediate thought upon hearing about the contract?
Well, yeah, the number at Drew, I mean, the number is what he was, and the number per year was likely what he was going to get. The thing that surprised me in terms of, from a concerning perspective from Anaheim, would be the term. Remember, he signed for this year, so it starts after the season, so it's the same idea as Ladd and Byfuglien.
He'll be 32 when the contract takes effect.
Yes. A six-year deal for a 32-year-old Ryan Kessler would be very concerning to me. I think you'll probably get maximum value, good value in your first 3 years, and I would coin flip if you get much on those last 3 years. The way he plays, that's the key here. Ryan Kessler, you know, I respect what he does. I think he talks more than he performs at times, but you know what you're going to get, and he's going to compete, and he's going to play hard, and he's going to play physical. He's had injury problems in the past. He's going to be relied on. You have to understand also, this Anaheim team, guys, go to the conference finals this year. I mean, he's played in Vancouver for a few playoffs. Like, he's going to have a lot of tread on the tires here coming up. If you're Anaheim, you're hoping you're going to go in a couple runs. Mm-hmm. So they're basically saying, give us a cup or close to it, basically, and we'll worry about the later part later. And, you know, I don't love the deal, but Anaheim looks at it from the and it's the day, this day and age, it's all about terms. So Anaheim looks at it from the perspective of, if we lose him, then we get nothing to show for him. And what are the last 2-3 years going to do? Are the last 2 or 3 years, are we risking, you know, our viability then? Well, Bob Murray's probably thinking, well, I don't even know if I'm going to be the GM then. The other aspect of that is the cap may very well be up then, and it may be less of an issue. And they may say he actually might perform because he's fit and he takes care of himself and all that. But there's significant risk. I mean, he's a guy who plays a style of play that kind of an Eric Lindros style. Cam Neely, you know, he's always in your face. He's always being physical. He's always in confrontations. And he's in the Western Conference against big LA team. I think there's a lot of risk, but I realize what Anaheim saw as the other option, and they didn't like it. And they're in a win-now position. They're not in win-later. They're in their prime now, all their guys. Getzlaf, Perry, you know, Kessler a little past it, but they're in their prime now.
Richie, we can all agree that we would be a lot more comfortable if this was a 4-year contract versus a 6-year contract. You know, fortunately or unfortunately, it's Bob Murray who is signing the contract, and he decided that to sign him to 6 years to essentially make it so that Ryan Kessler will finish his career in Anaheim. And as Richie mentioned off air, you know, heading into the segment, he wanted 6 years. Ryan Kessler and his agent wanted 6 years for obvious reasons. I mean, you have the security of knowing that you're going to be in Anaheim for most likely the rest of your career. Who knows? He might sign another 1 or 2 year deal after that. But I agree with Rich. The way he plays, it's a concern. You know, he kind of plays that Scott Hartnell type of game. You know, Richie mentioned Eric Lindros. He is a very effective player. 13 points in 16 games in the playoffs. He was excellent against the Winnipeg Jets. We know that. One of the main reasons why Anaheim was so dominant in those 4 games was because they have Getzlaf and Kessler up the middle. I look at it like, this team wants to win now, as Richie just mentioned, and if you don't have Ryan Kessler as your second-line center, you're not anywhere close to as good of a team. It's tough to go out there and get a Ryan Kessler. That's what they did last year, training Nick Bonino, and there were some other players involved to get him from Vancouver. But, I mean, that's the whole key. You knew that he was going to get paid, because even though Ryan Kessler, Richie, isn't the 40-goal, 70-point guy that he was 5 years ago with Vancouver when he was arguably a Conn Smythe candidate. You remember how good he was in that series?
Sure.
He's still a very effective player. And even though he might be a 25-goal, 50-point guy, he's one of the best face-off guys in the league. He plays that physical style. And that's perfect for this Anaheim Ducks team. And I like going out and getting Carl Hagelin, makes them speedier. And, you know, that Chris Stewart signing was a little bit underrated. You lose Matt Bolesky, but essentially you get another Matt Bolesky and Chris Stewart. I realize Matt Bolesky, you know, might be a little bit more of a sniper, but Chris Stewart has scored 30 goals in the NHL. So.
Yeah, I mean, not as consistently physical.
Right. I agree.
Yeah.
Just saying, I like the moves they've made, and this Anaheim Ducks team, to me, is still a contender. Again, going back to what I said during the first segment and what's happening in the Western Conference, the good teams have just really made moves because of salary cap reasons and to kind of tweak their rosters. When you look at Kessler, I mean, the big question, and I know Richie was asking himself this too, is how does this impact the Andrew Ladd contract? Because I think Andrew Ladd and Ryan Kessler, even though they're 2 years apart or 3 years apart, I think there's some comparables there because I think the Jets are looking at signing Ladd to a six-year deal, and it's probably not going to be that much less than what Kessler's getting.
Right. The difference with Ladd is, Ladd is reliable.
Different position. And
yeah. I mean,
Hang on. You talk about reliability for Kessler. With the exception
That's right.
Of,
Richie makes a good point. I mean, Andrew Ladd is an Iron Man.
Ryan Kessler, you look at with the exception of the lockout shortened year where he only played 17 games. Last year, he missed one game.
Yeah.
The year before, he missed five games. The year before the lockout, he missed five games. So he plays a physical style, but he usually plays it for a minimum of 77 games a year.
That's absolutely fair, Drew. But the injury issues doesn't always mean you don't play.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, but it may mean you don't play as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'll put you this way. And it's a fair point, Drew. And you look at him, he had those 3 years in a row when he played 82 games. Mm-hmm. And the year prior, he played 80. I mean, he's played a lot of games, okay? So they think, oh, he's reliable. He just played this past year, 30 years old.
Mm-hmm.
20 goals, 27 assists. Okay, and I realized, you know, he's playing defensive situations, certain things like that. Blah, blah, blah. 47 points in 81 games as a 30-year-old.
Yeah.
What the heck's he going to be putting up when he's 35?
I agree wholeheartedly with you, but I mean...
And also 73 playoff games played. Yeah. So add another season onto his career.
Yeah, he's played a ton of hockey. He's got a ton of mileage on his body. No argument. And could he start breaking down within a year or 2 years? Absolutely. And I don't think anybody would be shocked to see that happen.
And Andrew Ladd has never missed less games than him. Mm-hmm. Plus, and he basically doesn't miss any games. And the other aspect of that is Andrew Ladd has, to me, changed his game over the years from a more physical kind of depth player to a top liner. And he engages when he needs to, but he picks his spots.
Well, it's a good point, Richie, because if Ryan Kessler wants to play, I don't want to say play that full 6 years, but if the Ducks want to maximize their 6 years and really that contract has value in 6 years, he will have to change his style.
Well, and then is he actually as valuable as you paid him? Now, there's an aspect of it, him getting that money because he's a center, and that center has more premium over a winger. But one thing, Ezzie, that's to me, and Drew, that's pretty obvious here, is now you have, in 2016-17, when all these contracts are in, Kessler, Getzlaff, and Perry are all on their new deals, okay, mm-hmm. although Perry and Getzlaff start this year. You have a total of what? Over $20 million in those three guys. Okay? Mm-hmm. All will be, I misspoke earlier, Perry, Getzlaff, and Kessler are all the same age. Okay? So think about that. They're all 30 right now. You're going to have 20 plus million in three 30 plus guys for a long time. If you are not drafting exceptionally well with cheap talent, you're done. You're done. You cannot compete with 330 plus guys like that you're paying big time cash to if you're not drafting cheap talent, because how do you fill your roster? Like, for example, mm-hmm. coming up after next season, they're going to have to pay Sami Vatanen and Hampus Lindholm.
Yeah.
You got Fowler on a real nice deal right now for $4 million for the next 3 years, okay?
It's a great deal.
They're paying their defense essentially nothing. And they have young puck movers. They have a nice mix there. I mean, it's not a great defense, but it's a really good defense. And they have young puck movers. But when they have to start paying these guys, I mean, somebody's going to have to get cut out of there. So what are you going to do about it? If you don't draft young forwards, you can't keep filling your roster with Sean Horkoffs and Chris Stewarts and all. That's fine. But the best teams don't win that way. I mean, look at Tampa Bay with their young talent. Look at Chicago. I mean, Teravainen and these guys trying to get in there.
Mm-hmm.
They've signed a couple of KHL guys. We'll see. But the idea is you need to be able to bring in young guys to help out the expense of older players.
Well, they need to hit on the Nick Ritchie. Nick Ritchie needs to be a top six or a top nine forward
gotta
in the NHL.
Got to pay Silverberg this year, too.
Yeah.
And Hagelin.
Yeah. No, absolutely. They certainly, if they don't hit on their draft picks, like you just said, Richie, they're in some trouble. If you're Andrew Ladd and you're taking that, are you taking that contract and walking to Jets management and say this is where it starts?
No, Drew, I don't think it changes the Andrew Ladd analysis we did, because it's a different situation, and I think it's mainly a different situation because you're dealing with center who plays a different role. His role is not just a scorer.
Yeah, mm-hmm. A little older, and yeah, different situation. He's not your captain. It is a different situation. I think Richie's contract analysis from last week is still going to hold up. I think it's most likely going to be 6 years, and it's going to be slightly less than what Kessler got. I think it was around 38 mil, Rich.
Well, I think it'll be six
if he gets 6 years.
Yeah, it was 6 years. I had it at 6.5 or 6.3.
I think it was around 38.
Yeah, in and around there. Anyways, it'll be something else worth watching as we progress here during the summer and the UFA season in the NHL. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Dallas Stars and some defensive signings from around the NHL this week. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Now with Trevor Daly, though, Rich.
What about this? Let me quickly get in there. What about Dallas signing Johnny Oduya?
Well, that's been a team that has been rumored, and it would be funny if...
They definitely need defensemen.
I wouldn't be surprised if that was kind of part of this trade, mm-hmm. right? Because Johnny Oduya is not going to command that kind of number one defenseman money, but you'd have to think he's probably going to want, what, $4 to $5 million a year? He's a good defenseman. If you're his agent, Rich, you're saying... Look, Johnny Oduya was just playing in the top four of a Stanley Cup winning team. So I wouldn't be surprised about that, but this offers them the insurance.
That was from last week's Illegal Curve Hockey Show discussing the possibility of Johnny Oduya maybe fitting in with the Dallas Stars. We know that happened earlier this week as he signed a two-year contract to be a member on the Stars' back end.
Do I sound like that on radio?
You do, yes. Welcome back to the show. This segment is brought to you by Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100.
Shout out to Frank and Mauro Zappia. Frank always listens to the show at the cottage, mm-hmm. and he always tells us what meat he's cooking.
Yeah, so what meat is he cooking this week?
He has a pulled pork and a wood-fired pizza going right now.
Oh, very nice.
He had a brisket going last week.
That's true, he did get the
and
brisket.
We should probably get the tweet your meat, or what was it, tweet your meat to IC hashtag going again?
Something like that, yeah. Send a picture of the whatever meat you're cooking while listening to
Illegal Curve. It's the summer and
curve.
Everyone's barbecuing, so send us whatever you're barbecuing on the grill today.
What's the prize? As he shows up to eat it?
That's pretty much the prize, yes. Just sort of.
Sounds like the best contest ever. Yeah.
Uninvited, unannounced, as he's in your backyard eating your raw meat off of your barbecue.
I'll bring the barbecue sauces.
That's very clever of you.
Let's look at this pierogi contest over Drew's head here.
Well, hey, Rory just signed up. Rory's in. Producer Rory is in. Now we have 8 contestants, I believe.
You know what this reminds
Drew,
me of?
Are you in it?
No, I'm not in it, Richard. You know what this is going to be?
Drew's not in it because he knows I would destroy him.
Yeah, it's true. You know what? If you and I will probably go and watch the pierogi eating contest.
It'll when
be
is
like,
it?
It'll be like when George and...
Richie's going to come watch the pierogi eating contest and throw pierogies at me.
It'll be like when George and Elaine and Jerry go to the cockfighting contest at 3 in the morning.
Yes,
Elaine says to Jerry, Jerry, I'm at a cockfighting contest. It's 3 in the morning. What am I holding on to in life that I can't marry whoever the guy was at that point in time?
Hustler's putting this on, of course, and I just found out recently that the pierogies are actually going to be boiled as opposed to grilled. I thought I was expecting them to be
fried?
Grilled.
But they'd be fried.
Fried, pardon me. Yeah. Fried with some
it's
onions.
Very difficult to grill a pierogi.
Well, that's what I meant.
Johnny Oduya, two years.
Hold on. Okay. When is this contest?
August 6th. Right. It's at Spirit of Ukraine Pavilion. Very excited.
You've been practicing your whole life. I'm not worried about it.
I'm right now, by the way, we have the odds up here in the studio, and I'm the odds the odds on favorite right now at 4-1 to win this.
That's because only 3 people even have odds.
I want to know who A-Train is, though.
2 years, 3.75 per season for Johnny Oduya.
Yeah.
Like the contract, like the value, any problems with any of this?
I love the contract. And we talked about it. Rich was the one that made the suggestion that Johnny Oduya would be a good fit for Dallas. And, you know, Rich, they trade Trevor. I like that trade for Chicago because we knew that Chicago was right up against the salary cap. Mm-hmm. We knew that there was a good chance Patrick Sharp was out. We thought Brandon Saad was going to stay. We thought maybe a Brian Bickle or Chris Versteeg. Those guys, by the way, still might get moved, especially when you bring in a guy like Ryan Garbutt from Winnipeg. He kind of replaces what Brian Bickle does for cheaper. But I like the move because Dallas has a very good defenseman in John Klingberg. And Jim Neal talked about it earlier this week. They think they have like another Erik Karlsson. Not saying that he's going to be as good as Erik Karlsson, but John Klingberg, they signed to that 7-year deal. They kind of see him being a defenseman that they can have as their future cornerstone defenseman. And Johnny Oduya, you sign him to 2 years, Rich. You don't sign him to something ridiculous like 5 or 6 years. He's an excellent defenseman. I mean, Johnny Oduya, you forget, and I realize that, you know, in Winnipeg, maybe he didn't have his best years. He really came into the NHL with the New Jersey Devils after playing in the Swedish Elite League. But Johnny Oduya, I mean, he played big time minutes for the Chicago Blackhawks. Mm-hmm. He's not a guy that's ever going to be in the Norris consideration. He's not going to get 50 points every year. But as a skater, I mean, he kind of reminds you of like a Brett Hedekin. I mean, Johnny Oduya's got great wheels, great defenseman. And for Dallas, they needed that, Rich. That was their weakness last year. That was their Achilles heel. You've got a great group in mm-hmm. Jamie Benn, Tyler Seguin, Jason Spezza. Now you've added Patrick Sharp. Now you add Johnny Oduya, and it gives you that veteran defenseman that you've needed.
You need to get the puck to your forwards, and mm-hmm. that's what he does. He gets back in his own zone, gets the puck to his forwards. I mean, I don't want to simplify it too much, but that's kind of the key here. And they feel like he can replace what Trevor Daly brought to the left side there at a very reasonable clip of 3.75 for 2 years. You know, John Klingberg, as he mentions, John Klingberg doesn't skate as well as Carlson. You know, he's not the most physical guy, although he doesn't back down from contact. You guys know I talked about him last year. I really do like him. Smart player, makes the right play, knows what he's doing with the puck. I think Demers, ideally, I think we said last week, would be more of your third pairing right side guy. I still think they need one more left side guy. But I like, if you were to just look at the trade, for example, as Oduya, Sharp, and the prospect they got, I believe was he from Winnipeg? He may be. The Oduya, Sharp, and the prospect
Steven
they got.
Steven Johns.
Yeah. I don't know anything about him. For Trevor Daly and Ryan Garber, then of course the talent has moved to Dallas.
No,
yeah.
He's from Wampum, Pennsylvania.
Okay, if you look at it overall, that talent there is moving to Dallas. So, and you have, this is the thing that also you need to take into account. Both teams, and we're kind of breaking down the trade we did last week, but both teams are complementing the skills of the players that they're bringing in. So by that I mean, Trevor Daly can slot in beside, say, Nicklas Hjalmarsson, and he'll make him look better. And they need a left side guy who can move the puck and, you know, keep it simple, not put too much pressure on him. Doesn't need to be number one power play guy, all that stuff. Although mm-hmm. he can score. So that complements his skills. Ryan Garber can fit in on a third, fourth line role, no pressure, a bunch of other guys who can, who can take pressure off of him. He can be physical, but they need to rein him in, and they have the leadership in that room to rein him in, okay? Because he's, as you mentioned last week, a little bit of discipline problems, and you know, as you saw last year. You look over in Dallas, okay? Sharp needs guys who can pass him the puck, and he can play center if there's an injury. Well, you got Spezza and Seguin, two great guys passing the puck. And if Spezza goes down because he's been injury-prone, Sharp can slide into the center role, okay? So then you look at Oduya. Well, Oduya Klingberg could very well complement Oduya, okay? In terms of left-right guy, both move the puck, both are pretty smart. And the forwards that Dallas have, they can make plays. So, you know, in Chicago, the style of play is fire it up, long passes, you know, creative plays. They can do that in Dallas because they have the same kind of talent level up front.
Do you have any concerns? You know, it's easy to play defense, and I don't want to take anything away from Johnny Oduya, but it's easy to play defense behind Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook.
He hasn't always played behind them, Drew. I think it's easier. I think the point is it's easier than you think to play defense beside Nicklas Hjalmarsson. That's the key to me. So he's going to miss him. I know he's mixed up the combos quite a bit. He's going to miss him. Now, does it help that those are two Swedish players, and Klingberg, I believe, is Swedish as well, right?
Yeah.
So that's going to maybe help in terms of getting him acclimated and all that. And, you know, in Winnipeg, he was, I think, buddies with Tobias Enstrom. And so it makes their familiarity helps.
And Rich, you know, further to your point, you know, you've also got Jason Demers there, who they acquired for Brendan Dillon last year. You might put Oduya as your second pair with Dillon and Goligoski on your first pair. The point being, I don't agree. I guess you're not making a point. You're asking a question, Drew. I don't think that has any impact at all. I mean, Johnny Oduya is a great defenseman. I've been watching him a lot since he came in with the New Jersey Devils, and I know he's a little bit older now, but he's still got the wheels. He's in really good shape. And, I mean, he was a key part of that Chicago team. I mean, he played hard minutes, and you could say, okay, yeah, he wasn't playing because Duncan Keith was on the ice a lot, but then you're still getting those second and third lines of the Tampa Bay Lightning that were pretty darn good.
Well, and they didn't have a third pairing, so I mean,
exactly. So mm-hmm. he was playing big time minutes. So I love this trade. I think Jim Nill, I mean, has done excellent for the second year in a row, and I think especially getting Niemi to back up Lehtinen, I think the Dallas Stars are going to be a super threat in the Western Conference this year. And you know, you have guys like Julius Honka and Jamie Oleksiak. Those guys aren't quite ready yet. So you have Oduya for a couple years while those guys play in the AHL. Honka, I think, might play in the Finnish league. But Oleksiak in the AHL. So I think that a guy like Johnny Oduya is a perfect guy to sign to 2 years for this group, because Jamie Benn, Tyler Seguin, these guys, I mean, the Dallas Stars want to win now.
But also those guys can help you win later, too.
Right.
I mean, they're 23 years old, Tyler Seguin. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the 30-year-olds, the guys just signed to long-term deals. quickly, Drew, I still think Jim Nill will like to add one more left side guy. As he mentions, Goligoski and Demers both really move the puck well. And you have Klingberg, you have Oduya. There's your puck movers. Can they get a left side guy who can do a bit of both? I'm not saying he's out there right now. Or even a right side guy. I think they're going to want to add one more top six guy.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Mike Hyka of the Dallas Morning News will join us to talk more about the Dallas Stars offseason. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. One hour down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, for his, I believe, his final night in town, Chris Locke is performing and just announced tickets going on sale on Monday. Rob Schneider returning to Rumors after he was here, I believe it was last year, might be 2 years ago now at this point in time.
That was 2 years ago now.
2 years ago. Yeah. It was a tremendously well-received. Rob Schneider, September 25th through 27th at Rumors.
We were
tickets
there.
Go on sale on Monday. So you can, if you missed him the first time around or if you saw him and you want to see him again, tickets available starting Monday, rumorscomedyclub.com.
That's awesome. Rob Schneider, one of my favorites of all time. Does that mean also that our boy Earl Skakel is coming back?
I'm not sure.
Good question.
We had Earl on the show.
Yeah.
That's a good question. I don't know.
Because he opened for Rob Schneider.
That's right. Earl came in and then was the opener for Rob Schneider. I'll find out for you.
Yeah.
Because, I'm sure you'd want to come back on the show again.
The names that are coming out, well, the names have always been there at Rumors, but, I mean, you got John Lovitz, who's one of my all-time favorites, and you throw in Rob Schneider, and you know, I tweeted about this a couple days ago, one of my all-time favorites, of course, the late Chris Farley, and they're actually coming out with a documentary about Chris Farley called I Am Chris Farley. So, you know, these are all, you know, the SNL guys. And these are some of the guys you grow up and you watch on SNL, some of the funniest guys of all time. So, you know, if you have a chance to get some tickets, I know John Lovitz is sold out in a week, but those Rob Schneider tickets, I'm sure will sell out really quickly too.
They will go quickly as well. We're trying to get a hold of Mike Hyka, having a little bit of trouble doing that, so we'll try and get back to him.
He's trying to get tickets for Rob Schneider.
Yeah, yeah. Not until Monday. Monday at 2, Mike. Mike is going to have to wait till Monday at 2 o'clock to get those tickets. A couple other signings of defensemen that we can talk about in the interim. Justin Schultz and the Edmonton Oilers avoid arbitration. They sign a one-year deal worth $3.9 million that Schultz will get next season. It strikes me as a little bit higher than you would have thought that Justin Schultz would get for the Oilers.
Yeah, that's an understatement. 6 goals, 31 points. If you just look at the box car numbers there, Drew, in 81 games. I think this is a contract that it's more long term, and you say what do you mean with long term when it's a one-year deal? Well, they don't want to get on the wrong side of Justin Schultz. They realize, you know, sure they have Darnell Nurse and they have Oscar Klefbom and they have some other guys on the back end that they want to bring forward. They don't want to aggravate a guy they think can be the key to their power play on a team that's going to have a lot of dynamic talent this year, obviously with McDavid being in the fold now. And I really do believe that, because if you look at their team, we know that the defense has been a huge issue, right? We know that. And you look at Schultz last year, the guy played 22 minutes a game, okay? 22 minutes a game for a guy that we all know is not very strong defensively, okay? So 22 minutes a game, he played almost 3 minutes a game on the power play. Three. And put up that few points.
Mm-hmm.
Then you know they're not paying him based on last year. And I know you pay partly based on the past, partly based on what you expect in the future. But they, I think, to me, they just don't want to aggravate Justin Schultz. They say, oh, we'll pay you on a 1 year. We don't really care about what it is on a 1 year. If you really struggle again next year, then maybe we'll take a look at, you know, the situation here. But
so it's a goodwill contract in some degree?
I think it is a goodwill contract, Drew. And let's also, you know, the thing is, people need to be aware, he's an RFA after this year,
mm-hmm.
and he's 25 years old. But you also have to understand that Peter Chiarelli has never really seen Justin Schultz play. I mean, he's seen him play. He knows about him. There's a staff there. But he's bringing in new guys, new coach.
Yeah.
It's a show-me contract.
New regime.
Yeah. It's a show-me contract. It's, let's see how you can play. We've added Sakara to the fold.
Eric Greiba.
We've added Greiba to the fold. Yep. Griffin Reinhardt to the fold. We've added a lot of talent up front and then some veterans up front. Let's see how you perform in a more insulated environment. Now, having said all of that, he, with the amount of ice time he played, especially with the man advantage, he should have got more points. But I think they think the environment was so toxic that they're saying, let's see what we got here. And if you're worth it, we'll pay you.
Bit of a clean slate in terms of, you know, here's, and I mean, right now they only have about just under $3 million in salary cap space, but they've pretty much filled out their roster at this point in time.
He's got so much money. Daryl Cates doesn't care. He's got the new arena coming. He's going to make money hand over fist. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, Drew.
He's got pharmacy money.
Yeah, the thing is exactly. do you fight over $900,000? Is he worth $2.5 to $3 million? Do you fight over $900,000 for a guy who might help you for the next 10 years? Or you say, you know what, on this one, I'm okay with it.
See, I remember 3 years ago.
Pharmacy money.
3 years ago, my grandparents owned a pharmacy in Flin Flon, by the way.
Are they part owners of Rexall?
Richie, I remember 3 years ago when we did the free agency show from the Free Press Cafe, and it was the big Justin Schultz sweepstakes, and we all said, okay, let's calm down here because he hadn't done anything at the NHL level.
Hold on,
and
is that now? Or?
Well, I mean, he's 25 years old right now, yeah. and defensemen take a little bit of time to develop, and the Edmonton Oilers, as you mentioned, Drew, you can't really read too much into last year because the Edmonton Oilers were such a mess. I mean, they went long stretches without winning games last year. But, you know, Richie makes some good points, and I agree. Justin Schultz is an excellent skater. He can quarterback the power play, Richie, but he's not physical enough. And I think he gets walked around a little bit too much on that back end. And you'd like to see him. He's not the biggest guy. You know, he's got decent size, 6'1". But that has been his Achilles heel. And I don't know if he's ever going to be a number one defenseman. I think the Edmonton Oilers have asked him to be a number one, number two defenseman. He might be a better suited 3-4 guy at best.
What they want him to be is Mike Green.
Yeah.
Let's be honest here. He's not a great defender. You mentioned, as you're right, he's 6'2", actually, but he's not very physical. His defensive awareness at times, it leaves you wondering what the heck's going on in his head, right? So overall, I think what you're looking for is Mike Green. You're looking for a guy who can quarterback your power play, be dynamic, moving the puck out of your own zone.
Mike Green had 75 points. I mean,
well, hey, no, I'm not saying he is Mike Green, but that's what your ideal is. You're not thinking he's going to be the dominant two-way defenseman. He just doesn't have that. I don't think he has that in him right now. Maybe you can learn it. You can develop. You can become a better defenseman. But it's going to be, I don't think I see him molding into a guy that's your number one two-way guy. I mean, I think he's going to be more of your number two or three specialty guy, specialty at a high level. Now, he still has to do that. And while, you know, as he mentioned, you know, he's 25. He played at Wisconsin. He got his years in there, right? So he gets his 3 years at Wisconsin. He played in the AHL, obviously, in the lockout year prior to elevating to the National Hockey League. But your concern is this. Your concern is he was more productive in the lockout shortened year than he's been in the two seasons after that. And that would be a bit of a concern. Having said all of that, I think the new Oilers brass, is unsure of what they have in many players.
He's one of them.
New coaches, new systems,
right?
No leadership. I mean, you watched that team last year. It was a joke. I mean, they don't stick up for each other. It was an absolute joke. There was nothing there. Todd Nelson's, you know, kind of did a little bit, I thought, with that room at the end and made them a little bit more competitive, but they didn't listen to Dallas Eakins. Before that, I just don't think they put too much stock into what's happened.
And they have high hopes for a guy like Oscar Klefbom, and you've got Darnell Nurse, who was a high draft pick. Mm-hmm. He's in the system. So I think it's further to Richie's point that they've got him on a one-year deal, and if they don't think that he's going to be someone that they want to sign to a 4-5, 6-year deal, which is probably what he's going to be looking for, Rich, because he's not a UFA next, is he?
He's still an RFA.
Yeah. So I guess they could sign him to a shorter term deal, but you'd think that his side would want a longer term deal. I don't think he wants to keep signing 1 year contracts.
They figure that they're going to see him with a better structure and a better organization, and you know, hopefully they'll get better results in terms of on ice performance.
Right.
And you know, like you said, it's a show me contract for 1 year. And
Drew, the Oilers have Connor McDavid now, as everybody knows, and I think they're going to be a lot more competitive. I think they could compete for a playoff spot, but ultimately, if they want to get into the playoffs, that young D-core is going to have to be better. And you know, Richie touched on it. I mean, you bring in a guy like Eric Greiba, and obviously the big signing is Andre Sekera. Mm-hmm. That immediately strengthens your top four. Mm-hmm. But you're still young there when you're talking about Klefbom and Schultz, and you know, Griffin Reinhardt is a guy that got a little bit of a taste in the NHL with the Islanders, but that D-core still leaves you a little bit to be desired. You got Andrew Ferentz there.
Sure.
Obviously, he's the kind of the veteran that plays the Mark Stewart role of that group, but you're expecting a lot from some of these guys. Like a guy like Justin Schultz, he has to elevate his game this year. He's the key to me for that group.
Who are your offensive guys in the back end? It's Sakara and Schultz. I mean, Greiba and Reinhardt are not offensive players.
Right. So you go with what you see for a year, and if it doesn't work out, then you know you said, okay, this is what he is as a player. It's a 30-point player.
Then you leverage him,
yeah.
And you see what you know. He's gonna have arbitration rights, of course, but you leverage him and you say, okay, you know we don't love you. We'll see if we can. There's a market for you elsewhere. But yeah. I mean, you have to be able to fill that spot,
or we'll sign you knowing what we have, you know, under Absolutely. This regime, and it's at a lesser dollar figure than what we paid you this year.
I think Todd McClellan's experience mm-hmm. with a guy like Brent Burns, so sometimes a different player, don't get me wrong, but he's had offensive players in San Jose. He's a young defenseman. I think he's going to be able to help him. I see Schultz having a pretty good year. I think this is going to be a beneficial decision for Schultz, the one-year deal. I think it'll help him market-wise, and I know Edmonton's getting a little bit of heat because of the contract, but again, I do you want to spoil the goodwill over a few hundred thousand dollars when you don't mind being a cap team because you're making so much and you're getting a new arena? Let's think big picture here.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about one of the more interesting, controversial off seasons thus far. That's of the Boston Bruins. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
We offered, you know, we extended Dougie a very significant contract offer, and it didn't lead us to where we thought we'd be able to with him being comfortable being, you know, part of our group long term. So that sort of changed the course a little bit.
That's relatively new Boston Bruins general manager Don Sweeney discussing former Boston Bruins defenseman Dougie Hamilton. He, of course, was traded to the Calgary Flames at the NHL draft. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Randall Plumbing and Heating. Since 1905, Randall Plumbing and Heating has been an industry leader in plumbing and heating, servicing the Manitoba market. For all your refrigeration, plumbing, and heating needs, commercial or residential, contact Randall Plumbing at 204-775-8406 or online at randallplumbing.com. The Boston Bruins offseason, of course, you were there at the draft when they had the three straight picks in the first round. The Boston Bruins offseason sort of started poorly when they fired Peter Chiarelli, and the three of us in the room thought that was a bad decision to begin with. Then they hired Don Sweeney, that's fine. And it certainly hasn't really improved since then, as the moves that Sweeney has made, I think, have been met with a fair bit of skepticism as to where this Boston Bruins team is going and what their future looks like in the next, you know, few years, and then in the next and beyond that.
Yeah, and you mentioned Peter Chiarelli first off, Drew, and Peter Chiarelli has made some good moves and he's made some bad moves, but for the most part, I think we'd all agree that he's an excellent NHL GM, and that's why he was snapped up by the Edmonton Oilers right after he was let go by the Boston Bruins. But The moves that were made at the draft, you mentioned Dave Minuch and I were at the draft there, and I think we thought certainly that the Boston Bruins were going to use at least one of those picks, if not two of those picks, to move up, and we weren't sure if they were going to move up, you know, to get a guy like Noah Hanifin, which would make sense, Richie, because they just traded Dougie Hamilton, so maybe they want to bring in a defenseman, or maybe they had a forward, sure. Maybe it was sure. to get a Dylan Strome, for example, who went third overall to the Arizona Coyotes.
Mm-hmm.
But the point being, and I think some of the draft picks that they made, even though it's tough to know if those draft picks are going to be hits right now, you know, they drafted Jakob Borrell, and then they drafted Jake DeBrusk.
Yeah.
And I'm forgetting the third pick that they made, but they had 13, 14, and 15 there. To me, you know, I understand some of the moves they made as far as, you know, Lucic. You could see that the writing was on the wall for him mm-hmm. to leave.
Yeah.
And then you bring in Matt Bolesky to essentially replace Lucic, Richie. It's kind of that power forward guy. I like what Lucic offers a little bit better, actually.
The third first-round pick was Zachary Senyshyn.
Senyshyn, right. That was the third pick that they made, or one of the three picks they made, Drew.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, this Boston Bruins team, I think there's some big question marks, because you're still very strong, Rich, up the middle with Bergeron and Krejci, and you've got a lot of talent there, but you've lost a Carl Soderberg, and so you've brought in a guy like Jimmy Hayes, who's got some size and he's got a scoring touch. He had a very underrated season for Florida last year. But where's this Boston Bruins team going, Rich? Because Zdeno Chara only has a few years left at his peak. And then now you've traded Dougie Hamilton, which I know me and you have disagreed about this a little bit. Is he a future cornerstone defenseman? You know, he's a good defenseman, but how good is he, right? I have some concerns here with the Boston Bruins about where they're headed. To me, they're kind of moving sideways.
Yeah, that's fair. I think that's a fair assessment, Ezzy, because the question is exactly, where are you going? What is your goal? So if you look at the Lucic move and this trade of Martin Jones after they acquired him, you acquired two first-round picks for a guy who's a pending UFA after the season. I know he's a younger UFA, but at the end of the day, that is pretty good return. Now, I don't know anything about the draft picks, and I wouldn't know anything if I watched them play for 5 minutes anyways. You have to see these guys and know more about them. But the idea that you can load up your system again with three first-round picks makes sense. But to Ezzy's point, if you're going to be trading a guy like Lucic, and you're going to be trading a guy like Riley Smith, who I think is a talented player, more talented than Jimmy Hayes.
He was included in the Jimmy Hayes trade to Florida. Yeah.
I just, like, what are you trying to do? And you're going to trade Dougie Hamilton. Okay, so if you're trying to get younger and change the core a bit and then contend long-term, why are you trading Dougie Hamilton? And if you're trading Dougie Hamilton, why are you only getting what you got back for him? Because you're worried about an offer sheet? Is that your biggest concern? So you pay him $500,000 more per year to retain him than you were comfortable with, as opposed to getting, you know, 50 to 60 cents on the dollar. I just don't think that there's a vision. It seems like these moves are made. One, like, they're you're compartmentalizing this team and making move. What are you trying to do? Are you trying to win long term, or are you trying to win in the short term? If you're trying to win in the short term, I don't understand what you're doing. And if you're trying to win the long term, I also don't know what you're doing.
You know, all this fear about offer sheets, and you heard, you know, the Blackhawks had similar fear with Brandon Saad before he was traded. If I'm a team and somebody wants to offer sheet my player, I'm okay with that. That way I know what it's going to cost me if he signs that offer sheet.
Yeah.
I have my fixed costs, and I can decide, is this player worth it? And if it is, you can go over the salary cap in the offseason, and then I have the flexibility to try and make the moves to fit him into my roster.
The problem is, Drew, is if you do the box-in. What the box-in is offering, basically $7.1 million right before the bunch of first-round pick compensation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you get your first-round pick, and I believe 2 seconds is that compensation for the next level. So if you're Chicago and you think Saad's worth five and a half, and they sign him, a random team signs him to 7.1.
Yeah, you're saying the compensation for letting him go isn't great.
If it's 7.4, you'll take the deal
because it's the four first round picks or whatever, right. Whatever it is. I'm just not. I mean, there seems all this talk about. First of all, there's rarely offer sheets.
First of all, another thing people need to realize is an offer sheet can only be tendered by a team with their own draft picks.
That's right. So if you've traded your second round pick and then you go out and acquire a different second round pick, you can't use that second round pick.
If the second round pick is part of the compensation.
That's correct. That's right. Exactly right. I mean, you look at the Bruins' moves and you talk about, they pick up Jimmy Hayes, and I mean, I don't know enough about him to really
talk about
him.
I'll tell you about Jimmy Hayes. Okay. Jimmy Hayes is not a physical player. He's a big player. His brother's actually Kevin Hayes on the Rangers.
Sure.
He's got a good shot. He's not your fastest skater. And he's not overly physical. He played with some good players last year. He had some really productive moments. He did not end well. He did not down the stretch there last 20 games when they were trying to stay in the race. He was not very good. Okay. The concern I have is that they acquired Jimmy Hayes, give him 2.3 a year for 3 years. He's only 25 years old. I have concerns that they're going to see. He's a Boston native too. I have concerns that they're going to see a big guy with scoring potential,
local boy,
and they're going to think, oh, this guy's going to muck it up if you don't play in Boston. That's not the way he plays. So will he be able to succeed there with more pressure and, I think, unrealistic expectations on his quality of play? Riley Smith, guys, is a talented player.
Yeah.
Passes the puck well. He can shoot it, stick handle.
They got him from Dallas in the Sagan trade.
He's smart. I mean, sometimes maybe they wanted a little bit more, and some people say his performance was as a result of Patrice Bergeron. Well, anybody who plays with Bergeron is going to benefit from it. But I think he's the better player. And he's a different style of player, but in a faster-paced game, I think the way the game is moving, I like that trade for Florida. And you look at the Mark Savard. I mean, it's not even an issue really. I mean, they're talking about getting him off the books. I mean, Florida's paying him $500,000 this year.
Sure.
Right. So I don't know why that's a big deal to get rid of that contract. You can go over if you're going to go over the cap, then you can put it. He's on LTIR anyways.
That's right. And then they go out, and then there's the Bolesky contract signing. They signed Matt Bolesky to a 5-year deal worth $19 million.
I mean, The Pulaski contract at the end of the day, I thought was going to be worse than it was. You're getting from less than 4 a year, as he can shoot the puck. He's very physical. He's only 27 years old. So you're not paying a physical player into his mid-30s. Mm-hmm. I actually thought that contract was getting panned a little more than it ought to have. Maybe he's worth 2.5 to 3. On the UFA market, you're going to pay more. I thought it was weird, as he's obviously going to get his take in here on Pulaski, but I thought the Zach Rinaldo trade,
where they gave up a third-round pick in 2017,
I know, to acquire
Zach Rinaldo.
Just go sign a crazy fighter if you want one.
Yeah, Zach Rinaldo, have you seen him do anything on the ice that tells you that he's worth acquiring for a third-round pick?
Well, back to Pulaski, first of all, and then we'll talk about Zach Rinaldo. But
we
talked a lot about Matt Pulaski, obviously, over the last couple of months, especially with the Ducks playing the Winnipeg Jets in the first round, and we saw how good he was. I agree with Richie. I think, you know, signing him to a $4 million deal is actually pretty reasonable. We thought maybe he would get more than that based on, you know, one really good season.
That's right.
A couple of really good seasons, but one particularly good season where he probably would have scored 30 goals if he was healthy.
Mm-hmm.
But back to the Boston Bruins and the moves they've made as a whole, I have a lot of concerns here because Carl Soderberg, you know, even though he only played a couple of years in Boston, was a very good third line center. Now you're asking a guy like Ryan Spooner, who has a lot of talent, a little smaller, you're expecting him to fill that role. David Pastrnak, they really like in Boston. He's 19 years old.
Yeah.
So they're expecting him to now slot in as their second line right winger, and he's got tons of talent, and I'm sure he'll do fine. But the players that they are now expecting to fill those roles, that guys like Riley Smith, Carl Soderberg,
yeah,
Dougie Hamilton. So now your defense, you know, they obviously, Torrey Krug is a guy that now, after in his fourth year, they're expecting even more out of.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know that defense. To me, the Boston Bruins are a team that's built out from the starting in goal with Tuukka Rask. And this defense, I don't know if it's good enough to kind of make up for their lack of scoring. That was their Achilles heel last year. They didn't score enough.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of players that over the years were, and you know, they had injuries. Krejci was injured. Char was injured. This Boston Bruins team, I have major concerns. You have no concerns in goal, and you know that on defense you're pretty good, and they've lost a lot of pieces over the years. They've lost Johnny Boychuk. Matt Barkowski was a guy I actually really liked, signed with Vancouver. I don't know the makeup of this team. I don't know if this is a playoff team next year.
And you know, the Bruins team usually pretty physical, and adding Pulaski makes you more physical. Sure, Rinaldo, if he ever gets in there, and he will for his moments during the season, is physical. But I look at that forward group, and I say, not that big or physical.
Well, I mean, you say that Jimmy Hayes looks good on paper in terms of physicality, but doesn't play that way.
Yeah, but no, I mean, the rest of the players, guys, well, I mean, look at their roster.
Just because you're 6'5", Rich, sorry. I mean, Kevin Hayes isn't a power forward either. I mean, Kevin Hayes,
better passer,
he's a scorer. I mean, it's not like he won't throw a body check, but he's not Dustin Byfuglien. Right? Yeah. Like, his game is scoring goals. And the same
Jimmy
thing
Hayes,
with Jimmy Hayes.
Yeah.
Jimmy Hayes and Kevin Hayes.
Kevin Hayes is a better passer, though.
I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
But just saying, neither of those guys are, they're not Eric Lindros. They're not Matt Pulaski, right? So Pulaski is your power forward type there.
Yeah.
And Brad Marchand still has the ability to muck it up on the first line there. But is this team better than they were last year? I don't think so.
I mean, no, on paper, I don't think so. I think your issue is, you mentioned Hamilton in the back end. You haven't replaced him with anybody, Matt Irwin notwithstanding. And unless Brett Connolly, Ryan Spooner, and David Pastrnak, as you just mentioned, these players have big-time years. And I like Spooner's a good skater. I don't know enough about Connolly. Pastrnak's a very smart player. But that's a lot of pressure on young guys. And I know they'll be able to take off pressure by putting Bergeron out there and Krejci out there. But I just think, even if they exceed expectations next year, I don't know long term what the vision was of this past offseason.
Well, I think long term it depends on the first round picks that they made, and which generally were thought of to be that they drafted players higher than they should have been drafted.
Yeah, but we never know.
Agreed. You never know, and if, you know, 3 years from now it turns out that all those guys develop into bona fide, you know, top guys, maybe not top guys, but valuable role pieces, you can look back at this draft and it's a lot different and it's a lot more palatable. If those guys don't succeed, then Don Sweeney's probably out of work. Is really what it boils down to. We didn't even mention the Adam McQuaid contract. 4 years. He gets 4 years and $11 million right before free agency starts as well.
Yeah, he's a good solid defenseman. He was part of that cup-winning team in 2011. But, I mean, he's a guy that he's most likely a third-pairing guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a very solid, big, I believe he's from Maritimes, if I'm not mistaken. Good Maritime boy. So, you know, he's a good, solid defenseman. like that contract. But again, Dougie Hamilton is a guy that, I mean, you hear Bobby Orr talking about Dougie Hamilton. And, I mean, he...
We just didn't replace him, though.
Yeah.
Matt Irwin's not going to replace him.
No.
Better late than never. Mike Hajka, Dallas Morning News. He's coming up next.
All righty.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, and this segment is brought to you by Royal Sports. Since 1974, Royal Sports has been the city's number one hockey shop, plus so much more like soccer, baseball, bikes, skateboards, as well as having the city's largest selection of athletic and casual footwear. For locations, hours, and more, check them out online at royalsports.me.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program from the Dallas Morning News. He covers the Dallas Stars, Mike Hajka. Mike, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
A belated good morning.
Yes.
How are you doing?
Doing very well. How about yourself, Mike?
Getting by. It's 100 down here, but we're surviving.
Yes, the deep south, it's deep in the heart of Texas, at least. It's always a nice warm day, let's say.
You've got a pool, that's though, true. Right, Mike?
I do have a pool. That's true.
Okay.
Everyone does down here. They come standard with the house.
I didn't know that, by the way. I was actually just asking you that. I wasn't sure that you had a pool.
He's angling for an invitation to the pool is what he's really doing, Mike. So,
you're welcome at any point in time. It's sparkling blue today.
Yeah, famous last words there, Mike, I'm afraid. Anyways, right. We brought you on to talk about the Dallas Stars offseason, and really for almost the third offseason in a row, the Dallas Stars have been one of the most active teams. A few years ago was acquiring Sagan from Boston. Last year, it's acquiring Spezza from Ottawa. And this offseason, it's acquiring Patrick Sharp from the Chicago Blackhawks. How do you see Patrick Sharp? We'll start with him. How do you see him fitting in into that top six of a loaded Dallas Stars offense?
It's an interesting question because he's a right-handed shot who typically plays a left wing. The Stars have a lot of righties in the top six right now. I think what they're going to try and start out with is Ben, Sagan, and Sharp on the right wing, then move Val Nichushkin to the left wing on the second line, and then Nichushkin with Spezza and Hemsky. But at any point in time, they could move Val Nichushkin up to the right wing on the Ben Sagan line and move Sharp down to the left wing on the Spezza line. So they're going to have to do a little bit of experimentation, but they think that they've got some pretty good parts there.
Mike, Johnny Oduya recently signed, as you know, and I know you've been covering it a lot for the Dallas Morning News. I guess, first of all, are you happy with the amount of years that Johnny Oduya signed? And is this really a commitment by Jim Neal that they want to win now? And I guess as a third part of that question, I'm throwing a lot of questions here at you. how much better does Johnny Oduya make this defense? Because we know that a guy like Julius Honka and even a Jamie Oleksiak are a few years away at least.
Yeah, it's all of the above. The 2 years was huge because of the fact that Julius Honka and Esa Lindell, they got a guy in the Chicago trade, Steven Johns, who's 23. I think they'll all be pushing on the door this year and definitely next year. So having Oduya for 2 years is good. The other interesting part of all that is Alex Goligoski, Jason Demers, and Jordy Bend, their contracts are all up at the end of this year. And so, Jim Neal is transitioning pretty quickly, I think, into a younger defense. So that's important. As far as fit, Oduya, it's funny. I'm a fan of Trevor Daley. There are a lot of people down here who would criticize him because of his negative analytics as far as shots on goal when he's in the zone and how he affects his teammates. I think Trevor Daley is a really good defenseman. And Johnny Oduya is not any bigger than Trevor Daley, so then you're like, okay, what have you really added? But I think what you've added is a style that these Stars need. They were 26 in goals against last year, and they need a guy who is smart, who will think defense before offense, and who will complement an offensive partner. And, they have all these offensive guys down here. I think, even Demers, he's a two-way probably defenseman, but he's more of a skill guy than he is a physical guy. Jordy Bend, same thing. As much as he's going to be a defensive defenseman, he does that with puck movement and with quick passes more than he does with physical play. And so what hopefully they can do is take an Oduya and either put him with a Goligoski or a Klingberg or, somebody like that, and then help that person be a more balanced pair when he's on the ice. So philosophically, I do believe that adding Oduya really does help increase the defense of the defensemen, and that's big for them this year.
Mike, we were talking before you were on earlier in the show. Do you see Dallas adding one more top six defenseman?
I do not. I could be wrong because I honestly thought that they could do without Odia, because right now they have eight guys who require waivers, mm-hmm. And several of those guys are 24 years old, and so now you get to a point where, all right, are you really going to start trading away either Goligoski, and if whoever you bring in, is he going to be better than Alex Goligoski, or are you really going to trade away players like Jurki Jokipaka or Jamie Oleksiak? And if you bring in another defenseman, you're going to be forced with those issues. So I don't think they are at this point in time. I think they like the combination of what they have. The other thing that's interesting is Patrick Nemeth mm-hmm. Played really well 2 years ago, helped the AHL team win the AHL championship, and then was supposed to be a big part of last year. His arm was lacerated by a skate, and he missed almost the entire season. I think he played 20 games, 19 games. And I believe that they believe he's a 20-minute defenseman. He is a big, strong, physical defenseman. He's 22 or 23 years old.
Yeah, 23, yeah.
He has that experience, and I believe that that's their guy right now. I mean, why go after another defenseman when this kid, who I believe is going to be really good, if he just comes in here, stays healthy, and develops at the rate that he's going to develop at, I think they think he's a 20-minute defenseman right now.
It's interesting. We haven't heard a lot about him, Mike. And staying on the D, you look at this roster, and we're going to talk about the bottom six forwards in a bit, and then the goaltending moves the team has made. But it appears that there's certainly enough quality here on the back end to be a playoff team and on the overall roster. But is the defense good enough, do you think, to be a formidable foe and making it more than, say, a round in the playoffs?
I think a lot of that's going to be determined on how they fit together chemistry-wise. And then how the goalies play in important situations. And what happened last year was the goalie struggled early, the defense struggled early, and then they fed off that stress. Each side got worse. The defense started thinking, okay, we can't make a mistake because the goalie's not going to make a save. Then the goalie started thinking, oh, I got to be completely out of the net because the defense is going to let me down. And so there was this lack of trust between the two sides. If Antti Niemi and Kari Lehtinen increase their game, and then the defense can start playing with a little bit more confidence, then I think that the defense is a good defense. I don't think it's a great defense. Mm-hmm. I think it has the potential to be a great defense in a couple of years when these kids start to come through, but not yet.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Mike Hajka of the Dallas Morning News, discussing the Dallas Stars and their offseason thus far. Mike, another move that the Stars made, you mentioned the goaltending. They went out and they traded for the rights to Antti Niemi, formerly of the San Jose Sharks, whose time there had seemed to be come to an end. Mm-hmm. And then they signed him to a three-year contract worth $4.5 million per season. Was it just a function of Jim Nill thinking he needs sort of a 1A and 1B goaltender and to share the load, and if each of them, if he can get 40 games from 40 solid starts from each of them, or 50 starts and 30 starts, and to really improve on what had been an Achilles heel of the team last season?
Yeah, I think the Achilles heel is a big part. I do think they seriously wanted Cam Talbot first. He's a younger goalie. He's a guy who would come in at a bit of a more reasonable price. He might have been able to maybe push Kari Lehtinen to be good now, but also push him out the door later. And that deal just never materialized. For whatever reason, the Stars and the Rangers couldn't get on the same page. And so then after that deal became frustrating for Jim, I think he said, all right, here's option B, which is let's go get Niemi. He's a proven, number one goalie. He will push Kari Lehtinen right now. And once we get to the playoffs, this is a guy who's got 60 games of experience. Kari Lehtinen has 8, I believe. Mm-hmm. So in addition to helping the team get to the playoffs, I think Niemi also is a huge, he's a huge factor, a huge X factor. And once they get there, game one, they're not going to be nervous. I mean, there's a chance they go in and they get home ice. And, mm-hmm. They are the third-place team or second-place team in the West, and they're really having a great year. And, you put Kari Lehtinen in there in the home game, the first game of the playoffs, when he's 2-6 in his playoff history, and there's a lot of pressure. Well, at this point in time, that pressure seems to be gone because, you know, if there's any concern about Lettinen, Antti Niemi is going to be in the net. And so I think that's a huge factor in what they're trying to do. And I know they're getting ahead of themselves because they didn't even make the playoffs last year, but I think Niemi's playoff experience is a huge factor in like you say, trying to win now and you know, make a statement that we can do this.
Mike, what's Kari Lettinen's biggest problem? I mean, I watch him and I see a very, very talented netminder. I know he had health issues earlier in his career, but what do you think has been his downfall to the point that they have to bring in a veteran to compete with him?
I think it's the pressure. You're right. What's really impressive about Kari is he has completely reshaped his body, completely reshaped his routine. He is a very athletic goalie now. He's in great shape. He follows a stringent diet. He is extremely talented. You talk to any goalie coach, and they will say he's one of the most talented goalies in the world. He was second overall pick.
Yeah.
And the biggest problem that we've seen with him is when the pressure gets most intense, that's when he makes his worst mistakes. And, you know, I go back to 2 years ago in the Olympics. He got a call to play for Finland, and they were playing against Sweden, and he let in a goal from, you know, probably the – past the blue line. I mean, it was a long-distance goal. It was a bad goal. And they lost 2-1. And, you know, that was just, you know, he was great all the other times, but he let in that goal that lost the game. Game 6 against Anaheim 2 years ago, they're winning 4-2. And he goes down, paddle down against the post, and the puck goes right over his shoulder. He's a 6'4" goalie, and there's a huge opening over his shoulder with, you know, 2.5 minutes left in the game to make it 4-3, then the pressure comes on, then Anaheim scores with whatever, you know, 30 seconds left to tie it, and then they lose 2 minutes into overtime. And again, high-pressure situation, and Kari didn't step up. Now, I don't, you know, you hate to sit there and say, well, he's a choker or he doesn't have the mental strength. His history has been that when they put him in pressure situations, he hasn't responded. And so that's a big concern for a guy who's making $5.9 million a year.
Mike, I want to go back to Patrick Sharp for a second, and I think we'd all agree that bringing in Patrick Sharp from Chicago improves the depth, especially when you talk about on the wings, and he gives them another legitimate veteran scorer in the top six there. But is there a concern that now that Patrick Sharp is there, Tyler Seguin's going to be jealous because of how handsome Patrick Sharp is?
I think Seguin can handle it. It'll be a very fun experience for those guys. The interesting other part of this is they are getting to be some personalities on the team.
Yeah.
You know, for a long time, it's hard to be a personality when your team doesn't win. And so for a long time, not only was the team not particularly good on the ice, they weren't very exciting off the ice. And I think you guys have watched from afar and seen American Airlines Center with 6,000 people in it and seen the buzz of hockey around here, you know, start get grounded into the ice. And, you know, Patrick Sharp is a personality. Tyler Seguin is a personality. Jason Demers is a funny, funny guy. I don't know if you guys have seen any stuff he did in San Jose. He's starting to get a little bit of that swagger here in Dallas. And I go back to 98 and 99, and that team was full of characters. Craig Ludwig was a character. Ed Belfour was a character. Brett Hull was a character. And, you know, we go back to this is an entertainment industry. And it's kind of fun to have guys like Tyler Seguin and Patrick Sharp and Jason Demers who will make fun of each other and go do the body issue and bring other interest to the sport other than just, you know, winning on the ice. But, of course, you got to have the winning on the ice to make all that stuff fun.
Mike, and the rumors aren't true. Drew wasn't asked to be an ESPN The Body Issue.
I was totally waiting for that.
Me neither. They passed me up on that one.
Next year for us, Mike, next year.
Last question, Mike. The bottom six, they bring back Patrick Eves, which is a contract that I liked. How do you see the bottom six shaping up? But do you see some of the young guys, say Brett Ritchie's guys like that, in there, or do you see it being more veteran-loaded?
I think it's pretty young. You know, it's funny is that probably the leader of the bottom six is Cody Eakin, and I think he's just 23. He may have just turned 24.
Mm-hmm.
He is a really good, solid player who actually could play in the top six in a lot of teams as far as the wing goes, and maybe even number two center in a pinch. But that's a really talented young player. Then you've got Vern Fiddler. Then you've got Patrick Eves. You've still got Travis Moen, who, you know, when he was healthy and when he was playing last year wasn't bad. But then, like you said, you do have the Brett Ritchies. You do have the Curtis McKenzies. You do have the Colton Seviors, Antoine Roussel. You know, all these guys are under 30, so they're still, you know, in the prime of their careers. Then the other thing, pushing up from the minors, is Devin Shore, Radek Foxa, and Jason Dickinson, and all of those believe that they're ready to play this year. I don't think they're going to, you know, they're not going to be regulars, obviously, just because there's not space. Those are going to be hungry kids down there, and if there's an injury call-up, you know, they really do have a lot of good young depth in the bottom six.
Mike Hajka covers the Dallas Stars for the Dallas Morning News. Mike, always appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us this morning, and enjoy the rest of your offseason.
Sounds good. Thank you very much.
Take care, Mike. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. One final segment on this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thanks to Mike Hajka and Chuck Gormley for joining us. In case you missed either of those interviews, they'll be available on illegalcurve.com. You can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Get it sent to your iPod each and every week. One final segment. It's called Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire.
13 NHL players are headed for salary arbitration next week. Hearings will be held in Toronto from July 20th through August 4th. Which player headed for arbitration intrigues you the most?
You know, Richie, we talked to Chuck Gormley about Braden Holtby. You know, and he's a guy that had an excellent year last year, really established himself. I think is almost, you could say he's a top five, top 10 goalie. He's had some good years in the past, but to me last year, after having that down year, and then they brought in Mitch Korn to work with Braden Holtby. So to me, that's one that I'm going to be curious to see how much he gets. And you know, there's some other interesting ones there as well. And we, Marcus Johansson's another guy in Washington, but probably the second player after Braden Holtby, Rich, to me is Derek Stepan. Because Derek Stepan's been a huge part of that New York Rangers team.
Hey, you answer this question. You take all the two big ones.
Well, I mean, you know, there's other ones.
Jonathan Bernier's not lighting your house on fire?
He just took credit for my big salad.
I didn't know who you were going to take.
Well, I think it's logical you're going to take the two best players that are up for arbitration.
I want to ask you, though.
Well, there's Colin Wilson as well.
I think Stepan is the biggest one because, you know, as Larry Brooks has chronicled in the New York Post, why is this not long-term deal not done yet? Mm-hmm. But to your, Ezzy, I want to ask you about this one. Adam Larson, I guess, been really a bust in New Jersey. So far, still young.
It's almost too early to call him a bust, but...
No, that's what I'm saying. So far, too young still to say, oh, his career's over by any means. But to date, he has certainly not reached the expectations Luke Lamoriello and had for him. Now Ray Shiro's in charge.
Fourth overall pick back in 2011.
And they're taking him to arbitration here.
Yeah.
That doesn't get that relationship off on a good note, obviously, or is his agent so out there with the expectation? That one interests me the most.
Yeah, and there's some reports, Richie, out of New Jersey that they were going to avoid arbitration and possibly sign him to a long-term contract, which is tough to do because, as you said, he's kind of been in and out of the lineup. Pete DeBoer wasn't confident with using Adam Larson, and he's a guy that can they afford to really let him go, right? They've got other prospects there with Severson and Jelena and others like that, but... You'd think that Adam Larson, they're still going to be patient with. But, yeah, that's one. It's going to be curious to see how that arbitration case plays out, definitely.
Do you guys think that all of these cases will actually – how many of these cases do you think end up in arbitration?
No more than two.
That's probably usually about the average
arbitration's
number.
Not good, Rich, as we've talked about, right? I mean, do you want to go to arbitration and have a guy that's now unhappy? That's something to factor in, right? If the case doesn't go the player's way, is he going to be an unhappy player?
Nobody even goes to arbitration anymore. When Subban went to arbitration after the hearing, they did the hearing, but he signed before they had the result.
That's right, which is also an option. It's not like you enter the room and then all deals are off the table. Earlier this week, and we'll play an audio clip here in salute of him, earlier this week, Ilya Bryzgalov told HC Lada of the KHL's official website that he may decide to retire this season. Bryzgalov, 34 years old, played 8 games for the Anaheim Ducks this past season, posting 1 win with an .847 save percentage and a 4.19 goals against average. Before you guys answer, let's play a famous Bryzgalov clip.
I have a great news and even better news.
Give us the great news and then the better news.
Okay, great news, I'm not playing tomorrow night, and good news, we have a chance to win the game tomorrow.
What's your mindset going into tomorrow?
Make sure I'm not forget early in the morning my thermos, put some nice tea, and enjoy the bench.
That, of course, was prior to the Winter Classic a number of years ago. What, in a litany of fantastic quotes, is your all-time favorite Ilya Bryzgalov quote?
Well, there was a good one I remember when the Jets, I think the score was 9-8, yeah. If I'm not mistaken.
Season one in Philadelphia.
Yeah, and they talked to Brizgalov, and he said he was awful, and I think he went on to go on a bit of a rant. The thing that I love the best about Ilya Brizgalov is that he went on these rants, and you didn't know really where he was going with them. But to me, that HBO 24/7, when they were talking to Peter Laviolette, and they were asking him about Brizgalov, and then he said, yeah, he's been talking a lot about the universe, and then it goes to a clip of Brizgalov talking about how he's just fascinated by the universe. That was probably the best one.
No, I think the best one is the quote, I can read it verbatim. You don't want to go to Winnipeg, right? Not many people live there. Not many Russian people live there. Plus, it's cold. There's no excitement except the hockey. No park, no entertaining for the families, for the kids. It's going to be a tough life for your family.
How's his career going to be? I mean, is he going to be... Obviously, he's going to be remembered more for sort of the bizarre stuff he said.
Yeah.
But
that's some decent years, though.
Is his career going to be sort of underrated in terms of his on-ice performance?
No.
I don't think it's going to be underrated. He's not like one of the great goalies of all time. He's not even one of the great Russian goalies of all time. Yeah. I think he had spurts, Richie. He went on streaks where he was good for the Ducks.
He played well in Phoenix. That was it.
And Phoenix. Ducks, Anaheim was good.
The Ducks, I guess, says he. But they Brian Burke did him a favor by giving him a starting job, and he played really well in the defense-first system. Anytime there was pressure.
And even Philadelphia. Philadelphia, he had his moments. He had moments.
Anytime there was pressure, that guy was folding like a chair going to the beach.
Yep.
So like a beach chair.
Yeah.
Earlier this week.
But you fold it before you go to the beach, right? So you put it in the car, and then you walk it out, and then you unfold it.
Sure, but you could just say
unless you're using a towel.
Earlier this week, TSN senior correspondent Rick Westhead reported that the upcoming 2016 World Cup of Hockey,
who cares?
The NHL and NHLPA are seeking $8 million for the rights to sell jersey advertising to all 8 teams in the tournament. Do you think they will get this amount, and who would you like to see as a sponsor?
Who cares? Actually, the World Cup of Hockey will be unwatchable. I can't wait for the final when it's Canada against Canada and the U.S. I'm really going to be entertaining hockey, so I don't care who's on the ads, because I'm not going to be watching it.
I hope it's Trivago.
Because you want to be the Trivago guy?
Yes.
You just want to see a jersey with the giant Trivago guy?
They don't think they're going to, if you read the article that Rick Westhead put out, they don't think they're going to get anywhere close to $8 million. I also hope the NHL doesn't become like the Spengler Cup when they have the advertisements on jerseys. It's enough that they have the digital advertising on the board. The jerseys don't need to be covered in advertising.
It should be a really great tournament that I won't watch.
Last question, as we are now into mid-July.
Can't wait for the final when it's U.S. against U.S. and Canada.
When we're now into mid-July.
Or it's the four different European countries against Canada, U.S. under 23 team.
Over August-long weekend.
That's going to create a lot of rivalries.
You're just not going to let me finish the question, are you? You're just deliberately interrupting me, aren't you?
Great idea for Bettman and Fair.
Over the August-long weekend, we're going to be running a best-of show. Yes. Giving ourselves a nice weekend off. I think a well-deserved weekend off. I'm taking next week off as well as I'm going camping.
And the listeners are thankful.
I don't know if Drew deserves another week off.
Yeah, I know. Drew, how many weeks off has that been for you, Drew?
It's been a lot, but, what can I say? I'm a very busy...
I think this one might be a week off.
I'm a very busy individual.
You mailed this one in pretty good.
I did no such thing. How will you spend your time off, and how many hockey highlights will you be watching?
Jokes aside, well, obviously watching hockey house, but jokes aside, when we have that week off, I think, do we have one last year?
Yeah.
It's the weirdest thing.
Yeah.
Like 2 o'clock hits on Saturday and you're like, oh, the whole day is left. And honestly, it's very odd. I don't like it. I like being on the show. I might just come here and do a one-man show and just bash you guys for 3 hours or 2 hours, which is normal.
Yeah, that's really no different than any other show.
Yeah, I'm just going to show up at Drew's house and just start bashing him. And his wife is going to be a little bit curious as to why I'm doing it, but I'm just going to say, well, we're not on air, so I have to come to his house and do it.
That's right. But I mean, you have to be up before 9.
But in all honesty, Drew, I'm going to hit the gym. I'm going to probably activate that gluten-free diet that I've been wanting to activate for a while.
How
and,
much gluten is there in pierogies?
I would think there'd be a fair bit of gluten in pierogies. You've got to be prepping for August 6th in the pierogi eating contest.
Let's just say that I've been spending a lot of time with the Ukrainian babas in the North End, training hard.
I just can't follow up on that. That's it for the Saturday in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. A big thanks to Mike Heike and Chuck Gormley for joining us to talk about the Stars and the Capitals, respectively. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Rory, who did a great job in the midst of a power outage, because that's the first for us, for Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay
Stay tuned for Toronto Blue Jays baseball coming up this afternoon on TSN 1290.